When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Gary Antole's life spent living in mountain towns in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Maryland give him an authentic perspective to draw on as he leads his band, the Jacobs Ferry Stragglers. Gary is my guest for this edition of Americana Music Profiles.
Hi, Gary. Welcome to the podcast.
How are you doing?
Good.
Thanks
good.
For having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you on. So we're talking to you in Pennsylvania today. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, cool. So we want to definitely talk about the band, Jacobs Ferry Stragglers, here in a few minutes. But give me a little bit of background about yourself and music and how you got started and your musical journey up to the band.
As I guess cliched as it might sound in a way, like the first music that I remember being really turned on by, I was a little kid, 4 or 5 years old, was Elvis Presley.
Yeah,
you know, my mom loved Elvis, and I really loved the early Elvis, the rockabilly stuff.
Yeah,
you know, and kind of a combination of that and my dad having Beatles albums laying around, you know, it got me started on. And my dad played guitar, so it kind of. Got me started on wanting to play music when I was about 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
You know, my dad started teaching me to play guitar. That just kind of evolved into a thing I did, you know. I got really into, it was the 80s, so I was kind of a guitar player and as a kid playing guitar in the mid to late 80s, I was really into all the hair bands.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because they all had, no matter how terrible the music was, they all had fantastic guitar players.
Yeah, right, so, right, yeah.
I spent a few years wanting to be Eddie Van Halen, you know. And then I kind of got into the blues. I got into Stevie Ray Vaughan and all the blues players, which kind of progressed into me taking an interest in some jazz stuff. And I went to college at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh. Got a degree in jazz guitar. Following that, I did a few years on various cruise ships and playing amusement park gigs. It was a strange way to play music, but a nice way to make a living.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
It was a neat experience because I had to play a lot of music that I wouldn't normally have played.
Okay.
You know, and because it was a job, I had to learn how to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I got pretty steeped in like Motown and 70s funk and disco, because that's mainly what the audience we were playing for wanted to hear.
Okay.
You know, did a bunch of that. I spent a little bit of time in Las Vegas. I was in the lounge band at the Stardust Casino for about a month and a half.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. I lived in Nashville for a few years, you know. It's funny, I went to Nashville to play music and I didn't really play much music in Nashville.
Really?
You know, I did. At first, but I actually landed a pretty neat job at B.B. King's Blues Club downtown Nashville, and ended up just working a lot.
Okay,
you know, about 8 or 9 years ago, I moved home. I guess it's going to be 10 years actually this year that I moved back to Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
And I took a gig playing a Telecaster at a pop country band. it was actually like a pretty popular band in Western Pennsylvania. It was a nice gig, you know. Uh-huh. Again, not necessarily the best music, you know. And then I wrote a song 7 or 8 years ago, and when I finished the song, I thought, man, that'd be so great if I could record that song with a banjo player and an upright bass player. I think that would be neat, you mm-hmm. know? And, literally within a couple of days, I met a banjo player, an upright bass player.
Mm.
And, that evolved into, the first bluegrass band I ever had, you know? And I really, really just loved it. I don't know, something about it really captured me, mm-hmm. you know? That evolved into the Stragglers, that evolved into this band, you know? And then we've been going at it, coming up on 4 or 5 years now.
Hmm. So you really didn't grow up hanging around or being groomed to be a string bluegrass player, really. That wasn't your thing.
Not really, you know. It's funny, though, because I always really liked it, you know. Growing up, I remember watching, like, Hee Haw, stuff like
right,
that,
yeah.
you know. And I always really liked the music. I didn't really play it so much, but I did really like it. And I had an uncle. My dad's older brother was nearly 20 years older than my dad. You know, he was 16 years older than my dad.
Hmm.
And he, when I was a kid, I remember him singing all these songs. He was a musician as well. He played the saxophone. But I remember him, all these songs, you know. When I got into this, you know, this band, I realized that a lot of the songs that he was singing were like Hank Williams songs and John Hartford songs.
Right, okay.
You know, I didn't know what they were, you know, I was just a little boy. But I knew the words to them, like, hey, good looking, mm-hmm. stuff like that, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So I kind of always had it as a sort of like a thing in the back, you know. It was kind
mm-hmm.
of a thing that was there. Actually, I remember one, in particular, I remember one guitar lesson in college. I studied in school with a man named Joe Negri, who is a Pittsburgh renowned, even beyond Pittsburgh renowned jazz guitar player.
Okay.
He was the handyman on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Well, you know, it's funny when you said that. I thought, well, that name sounds familiar. So that's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, he was a cast member of Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, right, sure.
And just a phenomenal guitar player. He's still around. He's like 91, 92
wow.
years old, still playing shows every week. You know, he was a truly wonderful, wonderful human being. But I remember in one lesson, he looked at me and he said, you know, you should go to Nashville and you should become a flat picker. I confess that I was like almost appalled by it at the time because I was studying Miles Davis.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
I asked him why. And he said, well, because your swing is never going to be the right way. He said, you just sound like you grew up on a farm, you know, which like,
huh.
I grew up across the street from a farm,
yeah.
not on the farm, but I did, you know?
Yeah.
And, I thought it was funny that when the band started touring and playing, you know, and I started studying guys like, you know, David Greer and Tony Rice and Brian Sutton and all those cats, that one comment from Joe, like, came back to me. I'm
mm-hmm.
like, it's so funny that, you know, after 20 years later, I'm actually doing what he told me I could do.
Yeah, that's neat.
You know, so.
Do you still have any connection to him?
I haven't actually seen him, since I finished college, which was
okay.
in 1999.
Okay.
But we actually had, for a while, we had a substitute bass player in the band. His name was Dave Pello. And Dave was like the head of the jazz department at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And he was Joe's bass player for
okay.
a long time.
Uh-huh.
So, like, that's about as close as I've got,
right.
you know,
yeah.
playing with him. And that was really neat. Because Dave was just an amazing bass player, and I used to go watch him play when I was in college, you know, and then, years later, I ended up with him in the band for a couple of months.
Hmm. That's neat. So you've kind of, music's kind of been your source of income as well for most of your life, it sounds like.
For the most part, you know, like a lot of musicians, I've always worked other things, you know.
Right.
I've had factory jobs and construction jobs.
Okay.
I did concrete work for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always done whatever I had to do, you know. But for the last few years, I've been pretty lucky that the band's been able to sustain me.
So the band exclusively, so you don't have other music-type things on the side that you do in conjunction with?
There are a couple of small recording studios near where I live that record, like, it's funny, they mainly record a lot of hip-hop or Christian music, you know. Couldn't be more polar opposite,
right? Yeah.
You know, from time to time, you know, maybe 10, 15 times a year, I do sessions for them.
Yeah, okay.
You know, okay. So, like, on the hip-hop stuff, I kind of do more of a jazz, R&B type thing, and then on the Christian songs, I just take an acoustic and I play bluegrass-style stuff on it.
Okay.
You know, under a different name.
Yeah.
I never get credited as me. It's always, I have an alter ego for the studio stuff.
Okay. That's cool.
In
your press material, it refers to, it says their own brand of high energy Appalachian bluegrass. And if Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Maryland, for you, why is that different than Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, Blue Ridge style bluegrass? Is there a distinction? Am I splitting hairs? Or I see that sometimes in different groups, and I just wonder if for you, when you perform, is there some sort of difference?
I'm sure there is. You know? Most of the hardcore traditionalist bluegrassers, you know, make it a point to tell me that we shouldn't call ourselves a bluegrass band.
Okay.
You know, and I understand where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're kind of the blend of people in the band lends to, like, not necessarily doing the music properly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, it's more of a we have an old time fiddle player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Libby Eddy is our fiddle player, and she and I are also the lead vocalists. And she's an old timer, like, to the core. You know, she
mm-hmm.
plays old time fiddle.
Right.
And so that's a different feel than, you know, like a straight up bluegrass fiddler would be. You know, and then you have me coming from all the background that I came from, and then kind of like adapting. A flat picking style that works, but it's, you know, it's not the same as you would expect from a well known flat picker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
mm-hmm.
someone told me once that what they said about my guitar playing was that it sounded like Tony Rice and Charlie Christian, who was a big band player. It was like, if they had a baby, it would sound like
okay, that's cool.
You know?
Yeah,
and then. You know, and then with our upright bass, we have a dobro player, you know,
mm-hmm.
and mandolin. And our mandolin player also plays. He's a straight up bluegrass fiddler.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So when you throw that all together, you get something that sounds like something, but doesn't sound anything like it.
Sure.
At the same time.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Which is actually, to tell you the truth, it's the way I would like for it to be.
Right.
You know, I love traditional bluegrass, you know, like Bill Monroe, Flat Scruggs, all
right.
that stuff. I love all that stuff. But I don't really think it would be within me to recreate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because mainly because of what you said earlier. Like, I did not grow up with that as a major influence on me, you know? So I couldn't, like, erase the other influences that I've had for that. It just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, when I listen to some of your music, certainly I wouldn't argue that it's not bluegrass. I definitely appreciate the kind of the distinction. It certainly has all of the elements of bluegrass, but I think you're right too. It has its own identity, which as an artist, I'm sure is what you're striving for, because that way you don't really sound like anybody but yourself. And so everybody, the fans can identify with your music and hear a couple chords and realize, hey, you know, that's the Stragglers, and without having to kind of draw comparisons to other groups.
For sure. You know, the best way I guess I could describe it is that it wasn't a thing that we or I tried to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you know, we've gone through some lineup changes in our time, you know, mostly because of availability. You know, we play a lot of shows, and, you know, sometimes people say, oh, I want to go on the road and tour, you know, and then they do it for a year and they're like, man, this is hard. I don't want to I don't want to do this all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And which is completely understandable in every way.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've had two different banjo players and two different full-time bass players. And this year we are doing, you know, about half of the shows are just straight up four-piece, guitar, mandolin, fiddle, and bass.
Okay.
And then the other half include the dobro player, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Really this lineup is a couple of years ago. If I would have written down my dream lineup of people to play with, this would have been it.
Yeah, that's
you know?
Cool.
It's just all people that I'm friends with and people, we have a really nice chemistry. We're all friends, you know, we get along really well. And, I don't really ever direct anybody on how to play. You know, I just
mm-hmm.
assume that,
mm-hmm.
that everybody is, they're here for a reason and I like their playing. So, it's kind of a do what you want and let's see how it works out.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And because of that, you know, I like country music, like old school country music, you know, so we do some of that, you know, and the dobro player, Jody Moser, he also plays lap steel on it, you know.
Okay.
So,
that's neat.
We do some things with that. It gives it kind of more of like, it almost sounds like Hank, you know. Basically the same lineup, the same instrumentation that Hank Williams had.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay.
That kind of, it sort of sets us apart from the straight ahead bluegrassers
sure.
as well, you know,
and
especially the old timers, like the old time people seem to like think that's crazy
yeah.
that we would do that, you know?
Yeah.
But,
that's neat though.
I just like the music and I just want to play as much of it as I can,
yeah.
you know, and I want to incorporate as many facets of it as I can into
mm-hmm.
our original material. You know, we mostly play, most of our set is our own material. And we have this album coming out, Poison River, is our third full length release inside of 4 years.
Okay.
So, you know, there's 40, you know, 35, 40 original songs to play, you know, which is a nice thing to have.
Sure.
You know, especially
yeah.
when people like to point out to me that we aren't either of the things that we claim to be, you know,
yeah.
I can just say, well, yeah, but this is what we are.
Right.
You know?
Sure. And you got 40 songs to prove it. Right.
We got 40 songs that might prove it. You know, you never know.
Right, yeah, yeah. So you mentioned the new CD, and that's due out in about a month, called Poison River. And so let's talk about that a little bit.
It was a really neat project to get involved in. You know, we put this new, the current lineup that we're playing with, we've had it for about a year, you know, a little bit more than a year now is this group's been together. And, you know, we were touring with and selling and playing the first two records. And, I realized that I really, really liked the sound of the older songs with this lineup,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it became a thing. It's like, well, you know, we released a live album last year. We didn't have an actual studio release last year. The last studio release was in 2016.
Oh, okay.
So it was, you know, it was time to do another one, and I really felt like I wanted to put something out that represented who we are now.
Sure.
You know, so the records before were all the first two releases. First one was The Lane Changed. The second one's called White Lightning Road. They were mostly songs I had written with some like traditional or semi-traditional covers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I wanted to do it differently this time because we have now like three songwriters in the band. You know, so one major departure from the first two albums, the sound of those to this one, is that there are people that wrote other songwriters on it.
Right.
You know?
Cool.
Ray Bruckman, our mandolin player, has two instrumentals on it. Libby wrote a really pretty fiddle waltz that's on there called Hester's Waltz, and there's a song that she and I wrote together. Four tunes that I wrote. There is one song written by a late Pittsburgh fiddle player, great fiddle player named Sue Cunningham. One song that she wrote called Saint Anne's Prayer. And we did one cover of a song by a now defunct band that was called Sweet Sunny South. They were out of Colorado.
Hmm.
Our bass player had this album. You know, and he was at my house, and he was like, "Man, check this record out." You know, and
mm-hmm.
He said these guys aren't around anymore, but they're a really cool band. They
mm-hmm.
actually, I thought they were kind of similar to us in a way. They
mm-hmm.
had all the elements of traditional stuff, but they weren't doing it, you know,
mm-hmm.
quite that way. So we covered one of their songs on it, you know. I mean, that's kind of it, you know. It was a lot of fun to get together and kind of piece the songs together. Oh,
sure.
There's the first single off the album that's out right now is a song called When the Red Bud Blooms. And there's a really, really, really neat story the way that song came to us. About a month and a half ago, we played this random gig in West Virginia, in Tyler County, West Virginia, and it was for the countywide Farm Bureau Association convention, you know. And it was maybe 4 days before we were going to go down to national media to do the last session, and we needed two songs, and we had one, you know. And an older gentleman, I mean, in his 70s, you know, walked up to us and introduced himself. His name was Ron Fletcher. And he said, you know, I wrote a bluegrass song one time, and I never could get a band to record it. And it would be one of my dying wishes would just to have someone record this song.
Wow, you know? That's cool.
And, and we looked at him, and I said, well, sing it for me, you know. And he sang it. It was a waltz. The way he'd written it, it was a waltz,
uh-huh.
You know. So I asked him I gave him Libby's phone number, and he called Libby and sang it into her voicemail so we would have it.
Yeah.
You know? And we actually put the recording of him singing it on the album as well.
Really?
You know?
That's cool.
Yeah, there was something about it that was just really, like, really, really cool and sweet, you know. And,
yeah.
And we called him up, and I said, you know, hey, if you don't mind, I'd love to work your song up, but what we need is kind of a faster, hard driving bluegrass tune. You don't need another waltz because there were already two on the record, you know. So he gave me permission. We reworked it, you know, the first time the full lineup played it together was at the studio, you know. We just kind of went in and kind of just said, well, let's see how it works out, you know. It came out to be a really nice tune, you know. So that was really special to me, you know. I called him up and said, hey, we recorded your song and we're sending you a copy of it, you know. And
yeah.
And thank you so much, you know. It was appropriate, you know. The red buds were blooming,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Spring was coming. It felt like something we should do,
and
I was really happy to do it for him.
Wow, that's awesome.
You know,
yeah, that's so cool.
It was really special. It was kind of to me, it said, you know, we worked really hard on something, and
sure.
We were still coming up short, but we'd been working, and then the universe kind of handed us that.
Yeah, and what other industry musically can you be in where something like that could happen for a fan like that? You know, you can't do that in a pop world. You can't do that in a commercial country world. You know, you probably can't do that in a jazz world. So it's kind of
no,
cool.
You absolutely probably can't. Yeah, you probably can't do it at all. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, he was the sweetest guy, just really nice guy. You know, and on the recording, it's like on the single release, his version of it isn't on there. You know. But it's on the album. It's the last song on the record.
Okay.
The song finishes, and then it fades into him singing it.
Yeah,
you know? He sings the whole song, and at the end of it, he says, "Well, I hope that worked out for you. I'll catch you later." And he hangs up. You know,
that's cool.
And that's kind of how the record ends.
Yeah,
I think it's
that's
just
cool.
Really neat.
That's neat.
You know?
Yeah. So where can folks get in touch with you guys? Where can they get the CD when it releases next month? What's the best way to reach out?
Well. It's jacobsferry.com, www.jacobsferry.com, and you have to spell Jacobs with a K. You know, we spell Jacobs with a K instead of a C. And it's actually available for a pre-order right now.
Good,
you know?
Okay.
Lots of bands do, you know, online fundraising and stuff to fund their records. And we did that for the last record, and it was really fantastic. We got our goal. In like a day and a half.
Wow,
you know, it took
awesome.
Like a day and a half. We
yeah.
we had like $6,000 in a day and a half.
Yeah.
But I found the whole process to be really stressful.
Yeah.
You know, it was just all this money showed up, and then we had to deliver it, and we actually delivered it a little bit late. You know.
Okay.
So I felt kind of bad about that. You know,
right.
This time around, I figured, like, you know, I mean, making a record costs a little more money than people think it does.
Sure,
you know?
It does. Yeah.
It does. You know. So I just said, well, we're just going to pre-sale the record. You know, and that's how we're going to raise the money for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it worked. You know, we got about half of the total amount, you
yeah.
know, off of the pre-sale.
And yeah.
It's still available. If you order it now, as soon as I have the record in my hands, I'll mail it out.
Okay.
You know, so you get it ahead of time. And I anticipate, I think it's probably going to go to print in about a week and a half.
Okay, neat.
You know, yeah, we're in the final stages of approving the artwork and you know, all that stuff. And I actually just got the final master of it last night.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you order it now, you probably have it about 2 weeks early.
Okay. Good deal.
Because it's slated to come out June 15th.
Yeah. Yeah. Neat. Well, we certainly wish you the best with it. And, you know, thanks, Gary, for sharing all that with us and getting a chance to learn a little more about yourself and the band and some of the neat things, especially that last story with that song. You know, I think if nothing else, folks ought to get it and listen to that, because that sounds exciting and it's neat to be a part of that. So thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.